You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Californians know all too well the significant threat wildfires pose to our communities, with the potential to destroy and change lives forever. As larger, deadly, and more destructive wildfires become more common, they can also have a major ripple effect on our economy, from the damage to businesses, the loss of employees, disruption of supply chains, and impacting the stock values of companies. But despite the increasing wildfire risk to companies based in the western United States, a new report from UC Davis reveals only a fraction of publicly traded companies mention this risk, which is required in disclosures to the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC. The report suggests a vast majority of public companies are not being as forthcoming about this vulnerability to wildfires and other extreme weather events as they should be, despite the risk it poses to them and our economy. I spoke with Professor Paul Griffin with the UC Davis Graduate School of Management and lead author of this report. Professor Griffin, thanks for making the time today.
Thank you.
So you've been at UC Davis since 1981. You're an authority on accounting and financial information and disclosure, particularly in relation to climate change. How did you delve into this part of your field and your profession?
Well, my work earlier on was on, it's always been on corporate disclosure and what companies were telling shareholders and other stakeholders. But just over the years, it's been obvious that companies need to say more than just what they're doing financially. They need to talk about their environmental, social, and sort of governance issues. So I picked up on this about 10, 15 years ago, and then been working on it ever since. And so it's resulted in the sorts of studies you see today on wildfire disclosure. But I have other papers on heat waves. I have other papers on emissions disclosure. There's just a lot of additional environmental issues that companies need to think about and tell the outside parties, investors, creditors, employees, other people, of what they're doing, what their responses are to some of these events.
When looking at the report that you just recently published in response to wildfires, I mean, you examined more than 80,000 filings between 1996 and 2018. When did this part of your research start for you? Was it a particular wildfire or event that took place in California, or did it gradually gain your interest over time?
I think what happened is that these events became clearly more severe, more frequent, and so and then the technology becomes available for us to pour over, like, again, 86,000 reports, and we can do that electronically. We don't have to do it manually, which we would have had to do in the past, which would have made it almost prohibitive to actually do that. But we can do that in electronic form now. And so we can study a large array of these regulatory reports and identify those who are what we call disclosers versus those firms that have been subject to a wildfire event, and we call those exposed to wildfires. So we can identify that too, not through the regular reports, but through geodata that's available through NOAA and other forms of data sets.
Give us an idea of the scope of your report in terms of how many different firms you examined, the types of companies you looked into, where they're located, and even the range of size of these companies.
Again, we're not constrained, other than they had to be public companies because they were giving these regular reports. So they had to be public companies. We're constrained somewhat by the availability of electronic data. So we had to start at the point that we started at. And then we stopped in 2018 because we were working on this in 1920 and so forth. So it takes a couple of years to get the paper in shape and eventually become published. So that's where we stood, but it's a wide variety of firms. We've got the agriculture industry in there. We've got finance and banking in there. We've got the full array. We've got technology in there as well. So we have the full array of industries. We have a long time period, and we have firms of all sizes, so long as they're public companies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we are well aware of the increasing and also the devastating risk that wildfires can pose to our state, destroying homes, businesses, impacting the supply chain, sometimes, you know, just nearly disseminating and destroying whole communities. But how do they affect our economy, both on a micro and a macro level?
Well, firms have different degrees of exposure to wildfires, depending on where they're located. And so they are going to have certain facilities in those locations. They could be factories, it could be warehouses, it could be headquarters and so forth. And so the wildfires can have a direct effect, right, because they're right there in the midst of very close to wildfire. Or they could have a sort of more of indirect effect through smoke and through employee not being able to show up and so forth, but through employees. So that's how these firms are affected. Now the question is, they've experienced wildfires before. What are they doing to build resilience and harden their headquarters? And there's been some cases where firms actually changed their headquarters, or they have a headquarter option B just in case headquarter A is damaged. So firms are taking actions. But as I said, from the conclusion of our study, they're not telling us, the average person or stakeholder of a firm, enough about what they're doing. And one of the reasons they may not be doing that is that they feel they might be giving information away to their competitors, since it could be proprietary, that they don't want to tell too much about the way they operate and where they're operating.
Hmm. How are companies supposed to disclose these risks and these vulnerabilities? What are the requirements?
The 10K under the securities laws, the 34 Act, was legislated way back in 1934 as a result of the Great Depression, and there are certain item numbers in the 10K requirements, and some of those item numbers require that a firm tell shareholders and investors about material risks they face. And those risks could be risks to the business plan. It could be risks to the infrastructure of the firm. There could be other risks associated with maybe a business strategy or the competition they face. So they are required to do that, but only if they meet the criterion of materiality. And so materiality is a sort of a moving target sometimes. Some people would say it's one thing, some people say it's another. And so often it's a judgment call as to whether a firm will view an event or events that affect their future operations as risk-related sufficient that's as material to be disclosed. And so it's not always the case that you can identify how the firm made their decision. They might have looked at a wildfire and say, well, it's not material, it really hasn't affected that much. Or they might say, yes, it really does. And in the future, it's likely to affect us even more, and therefore there would be a requirement to disclose. But for the firms that don't disclose, they would judge the wildfire event to be not material to operations. Mm-hmm. There's what we're observing is probably not enough enforcement of the rule for disclosure. Because the SEC and shareholders, they have many other things to think about and try to enforce these disclosures or add pressure for firms to actually make a fuller and more complete disclosure.
So the judgment on disclosure falls on the company?
Yes, it's a company decision subject to pressure by the regulators or pressure by shareholders for misrepresentation or omission of something that an outside party would think is material.
So that brings me to a part of your study which found that when filing wildfire risks in federal filings with the SEC, some firms are instead placing them in non-specific risk disclosures. What exactly is that, and what is the strategy behind that?
Yeah, we call that boilerplate as a general term for that, in the sense that the firms feel they're satisfying the rules and regulations for disclosure by putting it into a very general category. So they can defend that by saying, well, we considered it, but we put it in this general category. And there's some actually legal opinions. I won't get into the detail, but some legal opinions that would actually uphold the legality of that form of disclosure, even though there could be a wildfire event that required disclosure. The boilerplate is not necessarily considered illegal or inconsistent with securities laws. But you do see that, and that's often a disclosure people make. But that would not be picked up by our study, because we're looking for specific disclosures of wildfire and wildfire-related words.
Is this done overwhelmingly in terms of not disclosing or filing the wildfire risks and vulnerabilities?
There's probably more of it than we'd like. But remember, the SEC, the Form 10-K document for the typical company is about 300 pages of text. And so firms are always looking at, do I need to put more in, or can I put in less in, and can I summarize in some ways. And so you can see that there's an argument that some firms say, well, there's too much information. It's not going to do anybody any good because they're just going to be overwhelmed. Too little information is probably not good either. So there's that Goldilocks sort of balance that firms are looking for. And some firms would include specific disclosures in that balance. Others would say, no, I'm going to put it into the general boilerplate category.
Hmm. Are there some companies that are kind of a case study in the research and that you're doing in terms of this?
Well, there are a number of studies that would be good as a way to demonstrate some of the sort of the themes or the ideas that we have in our paper. Obviously, PG&E is one because they've had wildfires and they had litigation, and their pre-wildfire disclosure was somewhat, I think, subpar in terms of what you'd expect. But there are other cases in Northern California. Some of the wineries, for example, would have been devastated by the fires of a couple of years ago, and so they would have an event which would 100% call for disclosure because it's a significant event, and everybody will realize that's a significant event, so it's got to be in the reports. But we have to think of it as a distinction between disclosing an event which occurred and disclosing the future risk associated with those events that will occur in the future but yet to have occurred. So there's that distinction. And again, what we're finding is that there's more likely to be disclosure when there's an event, is less likely to be disclosure when there are these events that could occur in the future with wildfires with increasing frequency and increasing severity.
Mm. You and your colleagues were encouraged, though. There are some firms that are acknowledging this risk of wildfires. Which companies are they, or what kind of examples in terms of the actions that they're taking to disclose the risk and also what they're doing to mitigate the risk of wildfires?
That question, it's a good question, but it's not the focus of our research. We're looking at a large sample, and it would be overwhelming for us to look in each individual company and whether they did the right thing, did the wrong thing, are they compliant with the securities laws or not. So we don't have that. We know the California firms, we know the different states, and so in the western states we're seeing more responsiveness. In California, we're seeing a little bit more responsiveness relative to the western states, but we also have responsiveness in areas like Texas, Florida, and even up in the northeast have had wildfires. So it's a national phenomenon. Well, it's global, but our study was national in terms of the sample we look at. We don't have those specific examples in our study, because that wasn't the purpose of the study.
Would you go as far as to say that there are some companies that you would consider bad actors?
I'm sure there are. it's not my job to name those bad actors.
What are some of the consequences faced by a company, stockholders, communities, when the companies where they're headquartered or where they're saying they're headquartered, if these wildfire risks aren't properly disclosed?
What's interesting in one of the results I found surprising, not what we might have expected, and that is that the firms that you would consider, quote, good firms that had wildfires and disclosed the wildfire and perhaps made a disclosure about wildfire risk, we call those the discloser firms. And relative to the non-discloser firms that also were subject to wildfires, the valuation, the fair valuation, the market valuation of the firms that were disclosers deteriorated relative to those that didn't say anything. So in a sense, you're being transparent, you're being forthcoming, but that's not necessarily going to serve your shareholders in a positive way. There's a little bit of a sort of a disconnect there, and I'm sure that's what firms think about when they're deciding to disclose.
They may take a little bit of a hit.
Yeah, that they might take a hit, but the other side of that is by taking a hit, they're signaling that they're much more forthcoming, a transparent firm, and they should get a positive result from that as well. So there's two sides to that.
Why should this matter to the general public?
It matters to the general public because these firms are part of our environment. We depend on these firms for services, for products, and we want those products and services to be priced appropriately and not having to pay for, decisions or lack of decisions made by firms when they could have made those firms to make the product better or more resilient or make the operations more resilient. So we're affected, in terms of what we buy, what we use.
Mm-hmm. Does your study and your research come with any recommendations in terms of the types of fire prevention and disclosure steps you recommend?
Recommendations would relate more to consideration of the current policy and whether that could be tightened to be more specific about what giving guidance to firms as to what they should do, and to increase the information to the public on what those risks are, because as I indicated earlier, some of those risks are hidden, and they're hidden either through boilerplate or not at all for the very large majority of the firms we studied. Mm-hmm. They're hidden risks. Risks should not be hidden. They should be more transparent and more forthcoming on their information.
Is there enough accountability?
That's the same thing. We would like to see more accountability. We'd like to see firms indicate what they're doing, right? But they will look at that and say, well, wait a minute. It's potentially, if I tell everybody what we're doing, what we plan to do, I may be giving away information to my competitors, and that's not good for anyone.
Have you received any response or comment from, like, the SEC or public companies or firms?
Not from the SEC, although I know that my work is read by the SEC. But in one case, there was a reporter in another session that I did talk to a particular firm and said, "Well, does the SEC require that you disclose wildfire?" And this person said no, and it was correct. But the question should have been, "Does the SEC require that you disclose material wildfire events or material risk?" And the answer is going to be yes. Mm. So I'd like to see more clarification on materiality so it can help firms make those choices, all right, make the correct choices.
We're talking about companies and whether they disclose wildfire risk, but more broadly, there is extreme weather and climate change, and you've been looking into this for decades. How did you first become connected to this type of research? And I would imagine it has probably evolved significantly in the decades that you've been focused on this.
Well, it's interesting. In the late 1970s, and I was a very, very young researcher at that time, I was actually asked by the Securities Exchange Commission to do a study on bribery. Because there was concerns that American firms were paying bribes to international firms to gain business and so forth. And so at a very young age, I became interested in whether firms were making sufficient disclosure about the way that they were making payments. We called them facilitating payments in those days. Again, a euphemism. To what extent were they disclosing that? And those numbers being quite small relative to billion-dollar sales, however, material, because they talked about the way in which the firm was managing its operations. So I've been really thinking about these issues, you know, for my entire career.
And this recent study has gotten interest from not only across the country, but in other countries as well, right?
I'm getting calls from Europe as well, yes.
What does that signal to you?
It signals that this is a global issue, not an American issue and not a California issue.
How do you want listeners to think about this research and potentially maybe even any proactive steps they can do to protect themselves when it comes to choosing which companies to invest in?
Well, the public out there buy products, as I said before, and they use services that are offered by these companies. And so it doesn't require that much more to find out what these companies are doing to mitigate, disclose, manage the various climate risks they face. That could be done through general public media, or it could be done through reading some summaries of these particular statements or documents I look at. But once read that, using either social media or other means to apply some pressure to these firms to change their ways, make more fuller disclosures about these risks, because they are important, and they're driving markets. We know that. And there's ways the firms can benefit by being more transparent and more forthcoming on these disclosures. So if the firms benefit, the consumers benefit.
Professor Griffin, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you very much.
And that is Professor Paul Griffin with the UC Davis Graduate School of Management and lead author of a report which found that despite the increasing risk of wildfires to the economy, many public companies are not disclosing this risk to the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is federally required. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.